CFAX 1070.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Legally Speaking on CFAX 1070 with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you as well.
Senator Mike Duffy learning his fate in a packed courtroom. You've been following this all morning. The update's coming in. What is he facing? 31 charges. Where does it all stand now?
Well, so far so good for Mr. Duffy. You're quite right. He's facing a total of 31 counts, including fraud, breach of trust, bribery. And so far, he has been successful on everything. 31 counts. So far, the judge has acquitted him of 20 of them, and they've broken for lunch. The judge is going carefully, count by count, analyzing the evidence on each count. And this was a long trial. I think it was a total of 60 days or something of that sort. There was an incredible amount of evidence given this large number of charges and incidents. And the basics of it so far are that the judge seems to have accepted the evidence of Mr. Duffy in terms of his explanation for why he did things and his understanding of what the rules were surrounding travel and residency, this sort of thing.
This is blockbuster right now. I mean, and just because the 20 of the 31 charges he's gotten off of, does this mean that, you know, things could still go horribly wrong for him with the next 11 charges? Or is that indicative of a trend here and that Mike Duffy's going to walk after all this?
He might. I mean, the judge is obviously being careful and explaining each and every count and what the evidence was for each and every count and what findings of fact he made. And that's how our process should work, right? Judges don't come in and just give the thumbs up or thumbs down symbol. They need to explain how it is they're coming to their decision so people can look at that and see how they've come to the decision so they can understand it. And then if a judge made some mistake or misunderstood the evidence, there could be an appeal theoretically. So that's what the judge is in the process of doing, just carefully delivering his decision on each of the counts. I also looked at the background of the judge. The judge who was assigned to the case was a provincial appointment by the provincial NDP in, I think, 1990, and he ordinarily sits in Toronto. They moved him to do this case in Ottawa. So I think there was perhaps some care taken to ensure that the judge was not only experienced, but somebody who no one could say had a particular sort of bias. So they've got somebody who's provincial appointment and not appointed by the Liberals or Conservatives. It's an NDP appointment from that point in time.
And what's your sense so far in what you're hearing, what the judge is saying? Because Mike Duffy has been vilified.
That's right. And the judge has, broadly speaking, accepted Mr. Duffy's evidence for why he did what he did.
He thought he was doing the right thing.
That's right. And the rules about some of these things aren't particularly clear. I mean, there's sort of the rules surrounding residency, for example. That's one of the things which was central to some of the first counts. You know, was he a resident of Prince Edward Island? And the judge reviewed things, including the advice he got on that from various different people, and as well his ties to that place. I mean, some of these things are pretty archaic, right? If you want to know about the constitutional requirements, you've got to go back to the Constitution Act of 1867 to look at what the rules are surrounding who can be a senator and in what circumstances, you know, can you be from a place. And to give you some sense of it, I mean, the Senate was originally established to be sort of, a counterweight to the hoi polloi. People, to be a senator, you have to be at least, and you still do, have to be at least 30 years of age. And there's a property requirement. You need to own real property worth more than $4,000, which I guess in 1867 was some indication that you were a member of the landed gentry or something of this sort. But we still have that requirement. You must be a resident of the province for which you're appointed, and you have to own real property worth more than $4,000. And the outcome of this is important for Mr. Duffy, not only in terms of what the potential penalty could be if he was convicted criminally, but under the there are various things which can disqualify you from continuing to sit as a senator. They can include things like bankruptcy or ceasing to be a resident of the province. But one of the provisions is that if you're convicted of an infamous crime, the language used is felony or infamous crime, you can then be removed. So for Mr. Duffy, the implication of a conviction here could be his removal, depending on what somebody takes to mean infamous crime or felony. So that's, I'm sure he'll be listening carefully after he finishes lunch as to what happens this afternoon.
No kidding. He's probably enjoying his lunch at this point with just 11 more counts to go. CFAX listeners, join our conversation, 250-386-1161, star 1070 on your cell phone. You can email us, talk@cfax1070.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Okay, the Minister of Health giving a speech at the United Nations announcing the Liberals' plan to legalize marijuana. They're going to introduce it spring of 2017. Your reaction to that, and if you could walk us through the timeline here.
Well, the timeline has a few important implications. One of the things that to be aware of is that if somebody is charged now with something which is a offense, a marijuana-related offense, if there's a change in the penalty between the time somebody is charged with an offense and the time they're sentenced, if they're to be convicted, you have a constitutional right to the lesser penalty. So you have an interesting circumstance now where for people that are charged with a marijuana-related offense, it may well be that by the time the matter works its way through the court system, the penalty would be vastly less or not criminal. So that will create some interesting issues. You also now have this possibility of you could have somebody who is convicted of some of the marijuana-related offenses that still include mandatory jail sentences, whereby you could, if you were so unfortunate as to be convicted now or prior to the change, you could be sitting in prison after it was no longer an offense at all to do what it is you were doing. And all of that says to me that, well, it's fine that they're working carefully on trying to come up with a regulatory scheme, I'm sure in terms of, you know, packaging and distribution and all of this. They may want to give some thought to directing the Crown prosecutors as to whether, in most circumstances, they should be continuing to approve and prosecute people for something which they've clearly set out will no longer be a crime shortly.
Mm-hmm. Let's bring Stephen in. Hi, Stephen. You're on CFAX.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much indeed. Any sensible person realizes we'll never get the truth out of this. At this sort of level, justice never appears to people at that level.
You mean in the Mike Duffy case?
Yeah. Have we ever seen the end of the BC Rail? Have we ever seen the end of Airbus? No, we haven't. At that level, I think it's going to be a whitewash. If they've got rid of 20 charges so far, it's only a matter of time before the others go. I have very little confidence in this whatsoever. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Should Stephen have more confidence than he does, Michael?
Well, that's why it's so important the judge do what he is doing, which is to carefully and for each count individually explain what their evidence was and explain why he's come to the conclusion that he has, so that we have an open justice system. It's based on reason, and judges have to explain what they're doing. So if somebody has a concern about how a judge reached a decision or whether that was the appropriate result, they should read what the judge said.
Greg's got a question about Tent City. Good morning, Greg. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much, Pamela. First, a bit of a wry comment. If it continues and Duffy is actually acquitted, I can't help but think that he will be at the Rideau Club with Gian Gomeshi drinking a single scotch, toasting the Canada legal system, which is such a shame because we all know that they have behaved badly. Michael, in terms of Tent City, clearly the people who are the neighbors have been put way into the trouble zone, and I am wondering if they would have a case to go to court and ask the court to reimburse them or compensate them in some way for the nightmares that they've had to put up with until now and clearly will occur until September 6th, I think it is.
Good question, Greg. Michael?
The problem with compensation will be that most of the people involved with causing the difficulty for the neighbors are unlikely to be in a position to pay compensation. I should say this, however, in terms of legal remedies for the neighbors, and in my judgment, what's going on there is a legitimate hardship for the people who live in the neighborhood. The application, which was made and recently dismissed, the provincial application for the interim injunction, that was an application brought by the province, the landowner. There are other. There's nothing to prevent, for example, a neighbor taking some other legal action if, for example, they could establish that what was going on constituted a nuisance. For example, it's like if your neighbor decides to, set up something which is completely disruptive, so you can't enjoy your home. You could go to court and seek an injunction to prohibit the mischief. So if there were a neighbor or neighbors that were experiencing that, the decision that was made would do nothing to prevent them from making an application to try to deal with the impacts that they're experiencing.
Mm, good to know. Interesting stuff. You're on Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam & Pearson. We're back right after this.
Call us 250-386-1161. Or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. Traffic got you down. We'll get you up and going with more traffic more often. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Dr. Glenn Cornwell is dedicated to the prevention and correction of foot pain using direct-milled prescription orthotics. These orthotics are produced by the same machines used to make Boeing aircraft, making Dr. Cornwell's direct-milled orthotics the most accurate and durable prescription orthotics available, guaranteed for expert fit and function. Also, Dr. Cornwell's direct-milled orthotics are generally covered by most extended health insurance carriers. Dr. Glenn Cornwell Podiatry. Call 386-9353.
Campus Nissan is celebrating Earth Day all month. This is your chance to choose from 21 pre-owned Nissan Leafs in stock starting at just $14,900. Or save $8,000 off the new 2016 Leaf S Quick Charge. And if you qualify for the BC Scrap It program, you get an additional $3,250 in rebates. At Campus Nissan, the place to see why Nissan is the leader in electric car sales in the country and the fastest growing automotive brand in Canada. 3361 Oak Street, online at Campus Nissan.
Most homeowners would never risk having electrical work installed by a non-certified electrician. Don't risk a potential fire or poisonous gas seepage from your chimney or fireplace by hiring anyone other than a red-sealed mason. Flintstone Certified Masons restore every chimney to current BC Building Code standards. Visit us at flintstonesmasonry.com.
Do it once, do it right, Flintstones Masonry.
Joan and Bob here from Heirloom Linens.
And this month, we've got a challenge for you.
We dare you to leave our store empty-handed.
We have so many great new items, we doubt you can do it.
Canvas art, home decor, lamps, essential oils, sleepwear, slippers, and jewelry. We promise you'll find something you love.
What if they don't?
Then I guess I leave with the satisfaction of knowing they have really good willpower.
I'd take the jewelry.
Me too.
Heirloom Linens in Broadmead Village and online at heirloomlinens.com.
We only sound expensive.
Hi, Jeffrey here. At Barclays Fine Jewelers, we know that when you walk into our store, you're looking for something special. That's why we carry unique jewelry lines like Alison Kaufman from Los Angeles. With a heritage of skilled artistry since 1920, their stones are meticulously hand-set into exquisite handcrafted designs. We invite you to come and see our wonderful lines of beautiful jewelry.
For fine jewelry, repair, restoration, and unparalleled custom design. Visit Barclays Fine Jewelers in Oak Bay Village, online at barclaysjewelers.com.
When spring returns, your allergies return too. That's why you need to take Natural Factors Bioactive Quercetin EMIQ, formulated to help control allergy symptoms and provide antioxidant protection. Bioactive Quercetin EMIQ is 40 times more bioactive than regular quercetin, reaching peak levels in the bloodstream in just 15 minutes, helping you feel better faster. Bioactive Quercetin EMIQ from Natural Factors. Find it at Lifestyle Markets on Douglas Street in Cook Street Village and on Fifth Street in Sydney.
Maintenance tips, repair advice, and more. Motorline.
Brought to you by Speedy Auto.
Saturdays at 3 on CFAX 1070. Your voice, your time. It's Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Good morning and welcome back to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pearson. Just check this out. Charges 20 to 28, Carol found this, involve, this is in the Mike Duffy case, involve payments for makeup services and physical trainers.
Well, we can only imagine what Mr. Duffy might have appeared like had he not received those services.
and if he were to actually, if one of those charges were to stick.
Well, I must say, from my from an outsider's point of view, looking at it, it would be ironic if Mr. Duffy were convicted of some offense involving trying to purchase a personal trainer to help him with his physical fitness.
Well, you know, when he comes back from lunch, we'll find out. But as it stands so far, just an update, he's been cleared on 20 of 31 charges so far, right?
That's right. Okay. And it bodes well for him in the sense that the judge has so far said that he essentially accepts what Mr. Duffy's had to say. That's an important finding in terms of what's likely to come.
All right. Back to plans to legalize and regulate marijuana.
Yes. The speech given by the Minister of Health, and interesting, it's given by the Minister of Health, not the Minister of Justice, at the United Nations, signaled changes which appear to be broader than the marijuana legalization, which is plainly coming. The Minister of Health opened her speech talking about the plight of a mother who lost her daughter to substance abuse. Talking about countless lives that are shortened due to overdoses and the use of illicit drugs. And those comments say to me clearly, because plainly you're not having people dying of marijuana overdoses. That opening and that discussion tells me that the new federal Liberal government is considering much broader changes to our legislation surrounding the use of drugs. And this comes on the heels of a Supreme Court of Canada decision from just last week that struck down the part of the approach the previous conservative federal government was trying. The Supreme Court of Canada struck down some more of the mandatory minimum sentence provisions that would have led to mandatory jail sentences for people convicted of some drug offenses. So there's a clear trend coming here, and in my judgment, the scheme that we've been trying for the past number of decades, trying to solve the sort of scourge of people using substances that will kill them by threatening to prosecute people in criminal court, has been nothing short of a failure, right? We have this emergency measure now as a result of this large number, hundreds of people dying of drug overdoses in British Columbia. So I think that speech at the United Nations was very important and signals more than simply a legalization of pot. I would hope that that signals, as it appears to, a change to how we address this serious problem. These substances, which people are addicted to, have the substantial risk of killing you, right? Hundreds of people are dying. And if the risk of death isn't deterring you from using these substances, the threat of being sent to jail for a period of time plainly isn't going to. So we do need just a different approach to that if we don't want to have our children dying of drug overdoses. So I'm hopeful that speech signals a move in that direction.
It's a health issue. Yeah.
It is. People are dying. In addition to people dying of overdoses, our failed effort to deal with these problems by use of the criminal justice system leads to people prostituting themselves. It leads to your house getting broken into by drug addicts desperate for money to purchase these things. It leads to robberies. It leads to gang activity. There are very serious problems that are associated with drugs and the use of drugs and people that are addicted to them. They're very serious problems. But many of the problems, not all, many of them are a product of our failed effort to try and stop people from killing themselves by the use of the criminal law. And that policy plainly hasn't worked.
What do you see happening when it comes to the timeline for they introduced legislation, and how does it work in terms of when we might actually see marijuana be legal in this country for recreational use?
Well, the Minister of Health has said that the legislation will be introduced next spring. And legislation doesn't immediately become law. When it's introduced, there's debate. There can be parliamentary committees. It's got to pass in the House. It's
Conservative Senate.
Maybe Mike Duffy will be voting on it. Maybe not in the Senate. And then go off and become law. And the government really should consider doing something in the interim. It strikes me as just not particularly fair that if you wind up in a circumstance where some particular police officer decides that they're going to arrest people for possessing marijuana, that the Crown are directed to continue prosecuting those matters. There ought to be some careful direction provided so that we have consistent application of the law across the country and that we are not ruining the lives and sending people to jail for things which are clearly not going to be a criminal offense a year from now. We just shouldn't have a circumstance where you may be sitting in jail serving a sentence for something which is no longer a crime at all.
How much time can you get for possessing marijuana, Stan?
Well, most marijuana simple possession charges are going to lead to something like a fine or maybe a period of probation. You're not likely going to prison for just possessing a joint in your pocket, but it can have life-altering effects. If you wind up with a drug conviction for marijuana possession, you may never be able to get into the United States again. You've probably seriously curtailed your employability. It's going to show up in criminal record checks. You're going to cause yourself a host of problems that go well beyond the fine that you might get for having the joint in your pocket. And that's, in my judgment, just not fair given what's plainly coming.
What do you think is going to happen when it comes to impaired driving and the use of marijuana?
Well, it's already a criminal offense, and this is important for people to know. There's a criminal code offense of operating or having care and control of a motor vehicle while your ability to do so is impaired by alcohol or a drug. And it doesn't matter whether the drug is lawful, unlawful. It doesn't matter whether you've taken Tylenol 3 for your sore back or you've used heroin. If it's impairing your ability to drive, that's a criminal offense and you shouldn't be driving. The problem becomes one of detection. And it's easy with alcohol, or relatively easy. With marijuana, it's harder. And one of the reasons it's harder with marijuana is that you can take a blood sample and test for the presence of THC, but the THC can remain in a person's blood long after they've used marijuana. You could find it a week later, and that person's not going to be impaired in their ability to drive. Different U.S. states have tried to approach that by setting various THC threshold, where if your blood test shows more than a certain amount of THC, you could be convicted of an offense of driving with that much in your blood. The problem at this point is a lack of clear evidence about what level might actually impair your ability to drive. And one of the people interviewed about that a few weeks ago in Washington State, who has used marijuana for medical purposes, her blood would have the illegal level at all times, even if she hadn't used marijuana recently. So there's going to be some interesting issues there, which is why I suspect the government's being careful about trying to get a legislative and regulatory scheme in place. But we ought not to continue convicting people while those details are worked out of things like possessing marijuana.
Fascinating, action-packed show once again. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Michael Mulligan of